Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is May 31st, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. The expansion of the Blue Lake Hydro Project near Sitka took a big step forward on Wednesday.
It's a red letter day. We received our FERC license today.
That's Utility Director Chris Bruton making the announcement at the Sitka Chamber of Commerce luncheon. FERC stands for Federal Energy Regulation Commission. It's the government agency that enforces the rules about electricity and energy generation. Sitka needs the agency's permission in order to proceed with the expansion of the Blue Lake Dam. Bruton says Sitka filed its application for the license in November 2010.
It's been a very long process. There's been a lot of studies we've had to do. We have to make sure that this project doesn't have any negative impacts. Or if it does have negative impacts, we have to identify what they are so we can mitigate for that.
Bruton says the city has cleared a major hurdle by obtaining the permit, but Sitka still has a lot of work to do before FERC will let the project go forward. That includes developing plans for almost any possible event.
A bear safety plan. We have to have a vegetation management plan. We have to have a hazardous spill and oil contingency plan. We have to have a water quality monitoring plan. We have to have a long-term water quality monitoring plan. We have to hire an environmental compliance monitor to make sure that all this is happening according to this license during the construction phase.
Bids are coming in for construction work valued up to $60 million. The city hopes to name its contractor by November. The Southeast Village of Cake is taking a serious look at alternative energy. It's one of five Alaska communities in a federal program providing technical assistance to speed clean energy development. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Cake on Northwest Kuprinoff Island has been searching for energy solutions for decades. Much of the focus has been on a power line to Petersburg, which could substantially reduce the price of electricity. But that will cost tens of millions of dollars and could take years to complete. So the village of 500 to 600 residents is considering alternatives such as solar, wind, woody biomass, and small hydro.
We're certainly going to look at all of the above.
Gary Williams is executive director of the organized Village of Cake. The tribal government was recently selected for research and planning support by the U.S. Energy Department's Strategic Technical Assistance Response Team.
We're working with others in the community to look at our energy picture, not only for electricity, but overall energy, so that we can hopefully reduce our use or the cost and the price of energy, and of course, increase our local capacity.
Cake is already looking at wind power. The tribal government and the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council installed a 110-foot-tall test tower about 2 years ago. It measured speed and duration to determine whether a wind plant would work. The results were positive, but SEAC's Dan Lesh says the location was not practical.
If you were close to an electrical grid, that would probably be something that you'd be looking at developing, but that one's about 8 miles from town, so the construction of that type of transmission line would be hard to justify.
Funds from the federal program, partnering with the Denali Commission, will help move the tower closer to town for further tests. Many Cake homes use heat with wood to save on fuel oil or electricity. Brian Hirsch, project leader for Alaska's branch at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, says that could be expanded.
And what we would maybe be looking at is some wood energy for their larger commercial buildings, whether it's the school or the community center or the tribal hall, etc.
Some Southeast homes and government buildings have installed wood-powered boilers using leftovers from logging, milling, or tree thinning. Officials also are looking at insulation and other efficiency efforts that would reduce the need for diesel or electrical power. The tribal government's Williams says that's an ongoing effort.
Already energy conscious, but we need to help them tighten things and button things up even more.
The overall effort could reduce demand on diesel power generators, but it's not likely to fill all of the community's needs. Cake officials have been working with the Southeast Conference and state officials for years to build an intertie to Petersburg. That would link the village with Southern Southeast's hydro-powered electrical grid. Williams says all the efforts could help the shrinking community grow again.
If we can get affordable energy over here, CAKE is very strategically located and certainly has a lot of resources around it that would really jumpstart our economy again.
The Strategic Technical Assistance Response Team is working with four other village tribal governments. They're Arctic Village, north of Fort Yukon, Quinnahawk, southwest of Bethel, Teller, northwest of Nome, and Venati, northwest of Fort Yukon. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
The family of a teenager who drowned at a Haines beach 2 years ago is suing the Haines borough for wrongful death. They're asking for at least $1 million in damages, and Margaret Friedenauer reports.
14-year-old Andrew Williamson died in May 2010 while swimming in Lynn Canal waters near the borough's Port Chilcoot cruise dock. The suit was filed last week in Juneau Superior Court by Andrew's parents, Larry and Chetra Williamson, who now live in Florida. Andrew was their only child. The couple's Juneau attorney, in court documents, levels charges of negligence, wrongful death, and emotional distress against the borough. The suit claims the borough knew swimming was common at the beach, but failed to make the area safe for visitors. The complaint says there are no warning signs posted at the beach or near the dock, no lifeguard on duty, and no life-saving equipment like a life ring in the area. The suit says the borough had a duty to warn beachgoers of the seawater's low temperature and the dangers associated with jumping off the dock and nearby mooring float.
That was Margaret Friedenauer reporting from Haines. U.S. Senator Mark Begich has been using the congressional recess to visit his home state. The Democrat made a stop in Petersburg over the weekend, where he visited with town officials, fishermen, and residents. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein was amongst the reporters who spoke with Begich. He asked him about a variety of issues facing Southeast Alaska, including concerns among fishermen about the growing sea otter population.
We've actually talked about this with the federal government folks in regards to how to manage those the issue, and it's hard to explain that actually harvesting them is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It helps create some balance back into the oceans. But also, if we work with our native communities, I think there's a great way to take then those pelts and utilize them in a commercial way that benefits the native community. So we have recommended some ideas, and we're definitely following this because we know what it's doing to the harvest, especially the shellfish. So we know. We have to manage that down from the level it's at today. But when you try to explain this to folks in Washington, D.C., they don't get it. They think, well, we should preserve every type of animal that's in the water. And you try to explain, well, this actually is in balance right now. And the only way you rebalance it is there has to be some harvesting. And that is hard for folks back east to understand that.
Secure rural schools, looking at the one-year extension at this point, yeah. Do you expect that to go through soon, or what about the long-term, I guess?
Yeah, it's attached to the transportation bill, so if the transportation bill passes out at the end of June, this will be part of it. The challenge is, it passed by a pretty large margin, that amendment. The challenge is, it is a rider on the transportation bill. Sometimes they take those riders out after they do the compromise, but we feel like there's a lot of support, so we're feeling pretty good that it could stay in there. Then we have a longer-term plan that's been agreed upon, which extends it out 5 years with a 5% reduction over 5 years and then stops after 25% reduction.
That's a Treasury-funded program, right?
Correct.
It wouldn't be resource-based.
Correct, because it's changed, right. And that is a compromise from where some people wanted it, which was to eliminate the whole program. And so we feel that the states that were most affected by this came up with a solution. But right now, this next year will be fully funded if the rider passes, and then we'll continue to work on that compromise. A lot of good support around it. People understand the value of it, especially for small communities as we're in here today. But I think there's a high interest on it.
Sea Alaska Lands Bill,
yes.
That was supposed to be marked up sometime soon. Obviously, for people on all sides of that issue, or what's the status right now and what's next with it?
Well, there's a couple things. There's a Sea Alaska Lands Bill, then there's also the mental health lands issues, too, that's moving around. But the Sea Alaska one, they were just, matter of fact, in my office in D.C. this last week. They have just had another meeting with the folks with the administration. I don't think they got to a final decision at this point of the compromise. The issues are sacred sites and future sites, they call them. Future for economic development, sacred sites, which are traditional sites. It looks like on the bulk of the lands, there's pretty much agreement on where those would be. There's some pieces that still need to be worked out. But right now in Congress, the challenge is it's in the big picture of the issues we're dealing with, you know, the budget, the deficit, the defense funding issues that we were working on this last week, the tax reform. It's a small issue in this big picture, trying to get other members to see this as an important issue. So what we're trying to do is craft a larger lands bill that touches lots of different states and having this a piece of the equation. The challenge is the bill, which is primary sponsor on it, Senator Murkowski, is working this and trying to figure out where the compromise is. The problem is you do have two ends of this that some people don't want anything done, and some people want to even go further. So it's been very difficult to get to a compromise on this at this point.
That's U.S. Senator Mark Begich speaking with reporters during a visit to Petersburg last week. Washington fishermen who oppose a proposed mine in Alaska are having their say in an Environmental Protection Agency hearing today in Seattle. Senator Maria Cantwell requested that the hearing, because she says fishermen would be affected if the Pebble Mine damages the Bristol Bay salmon fishery. She says nearly 1,000 people in Washington hold commercial permits for Bristol Bay fishing that was worth more than $113 million in 2008. Recreational salmon fishing was worth another $75 million for Washington businesses. The copper and gold mine is proposed near the headwaters of Bristol Bay rivers. Opponents worry about pollution and loss of habitat. Supporters say the mine would create jobs. The EPA plans 7 more hearings in Alaska and could veto the project under clean water laws. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.